It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses.
Special Edition: How to Win the Bachelor, an ongoing off-season miniseries that breaks down the game, its rules, and all the best strategies for success in the Instagram era. Welcome to
Game of Roses.
I'm Bachelor Clues. With me today, back from a long journey around the world, parts unknown, saw new sights, ate new foods, heard new musics. It's Lizzie Pace.
Jesus. It's Lizzie Pace, your world traveler. I went to Germany and I missed the end of our season. I'm so sorry to all of our listeners. I accept all of the hate mail I've been getting.
You deserve it.
I deserve it. We thank Catherine Dudas, though, for filling in for me last week.
Yep, she was great.
Thanks, she did a great job.
And now we find ourselves in the cold, long off season of The Bachelor. There is no Bachelor to watch. There is no Bachelorette. There is no Bachelor in Paradise. There is no Bachelor Winter Games. We're going to have to wait until the first week of January before we start seeing the footage coming out from White Peter's new season of The Bachelor. And in the meantime,
are we Lizzie just calling him White Peter? I like that.
In the meantime, Lizzie and I thought that during this off season, we would begin to analyze the game that we're watching, to really break it down. And if anyone out there is listening that ever wants to be on the show, that ever wants to compete in our great game, please take the strategies that we're outlining here and use them. Because now we have 24 seasons of The Bachelor, 16 of The Bachelorette.
15
of The Bachelorette. Still a high number. Okay. Not quite as high as 16, but still a high number. And 6 of Bachelor in Paradise. So we have seen multiple seasons of each of these variants of the game. And from those seasons, we are now able to derive statistical meaning from a wide variety of plays and situations within the game. And from those statistics, we are able to generate strategies for any player to make it through to the end and win, essentially.
Yeah, our strategies are for the modern era, I would say. The post-Nick Viall era, where Instagram is a huge factor in your success on the show and outside the show.
Yes, much like the steroid era of baseball, ushered in by Jose Canseco and Mark McGwire, most would agree. The game has changed, and you're right. We are now living in the Instagram era of our beloved game. To begin, we thought we would start where anyone starts with any game, breaking down the fundamentals. These are essentially unwritten rules, only unwritten because The Bachelor, as a TV show, puts itself out there as a means by which people can find love. It tells us that the reason for this show's existence is to help people fall in love. That's a lie, obviously, but because they need that conceit for the show to exist, they will never openly admit there are rules to this game that all of these players are playing. The best players are able to intuit those rules and work around them or use them to their advantage, but at least they're aware of them. So Lizzie and I now are going to set them out here in clear detail so there is no misunderstanding about what this game is and how it is played.
Basically, if you're one of the people who are chosen to be on the show, and the odds are probably infinitesimal at this point, like you're chosen from thousands and thousands of...
Tens of thousands of people audition for this show in one way or another, either by submitting tapes or showing up to one of the live casting events.
And they only pick 30 each season, so it's unlikely that you will be able to compete in this game. But if you do play, you could possibly get 100,000 to a million Instagram followers, even more at this point. Tyler C is raising the bar for everyone.
It's life-changing, essentially. What you want to do when you enter the game, you want to come out of it with enough Instagram followers to be selling hair care products and liquor brands for at least the next 2 to 3 years, and possibly some repeat performances in Bachelor in Paradise. Or in rare occasions, even get on the next season of The Bachelor or Bachelorette, or in very rare occasions, become the Bachelor or Bachelorette, which leads us to our first fundamental. The ring and the crown.
What is the ring and the crown?
Well, in our beloved game, There are two prizes, the ring and the crown. The ring is making it all the way to the end of your season of The Bachelor and being selected by the Bachelor himself to be his lovely wife. You want that Bachelor down on a knee. You want him opening that Neil Lane box. You want to see that Neil Lane sparkler, and you want it slipped on your finger, because that then means you are going to have a year's worth of press in Us Weekly and People Magazine. You're going to have multiple Instagram spreads. You're going to combine your followership on Instagram. It's going to boost you up. You're going to ride the wave of being the victor of that season. The crown is a little harder to get, but a better prize. The crown is leaving The Bachelor, having not been chosen by him, but then being chosen by the show to be the next Bachelorette. That is the crown.
The show implies that the ring is the true prize, but what we know is that the crown is actually a greater prize, because you screen time roughly translates to Instagram followers. So if you cut yourself off with the ring and you're only on one season, you're getting half the amount of exposure. If you get the crown and you're the next Bachelorette, you continue gaining followers for a longer period of time.
And you become Bachelor royalty, which is the goal of, should be the goal of every player, whether you get the crown or the ring. Ultimately, you want to be perceived as a player who wound up in a successful couple. You see it happen on Bachelor in Paradise with Jade and Tanner, with Carly and Evan, with Crystal and the Goose.
They talk about Jade and Tanner like they have fucking reached nirvana with their success and how happy they are.
Yes, but this is long game stuff. When you're coming into The Bachelor, there are only two focuses for you, two prizes. You're either going after the ring or the crown, and your strategies can be very similar up until Fantasy Suites. Which brings me to my next fundamental. The structure of the game. How is it actually broken down? Just like a football game or a basketball game has quarters and periods, and a baseball game has innings, the structure of our beloved game has three parts of the season. There is the regular season, which is the first 7 weeks or rounds of the game that involve group dates, one-on-ones, etc. Then there's the playoffs, which is roughly around the 8th week of the game, and this is where the rules change just a little bit. This is the Fantasy Suites. This is the hometown dates. And then finally we have the finals, which is the final week of the game, where it is usually down to two, sometimes three final players. Your style of play there changes dramatically if you want to go for the crown instead of the ring. But that's essentially how the season breaks down.
Right.
Regular season, playoffs, and finals. The next fundamental of our beloved game is, of course, roses. What else?
This is a game of roses.
It is a game of roses. Roses are the in-game currency, if you will. Player has to get one of these at every stage of the game to assure that they will come back for the next stage. And ultimately, any player's base strategy is simply to get a rose at every opportunity, whether that's going to be a first impression rose, whether that's going to be a pity rose, if you can pull it off, which Cam could not on the last season of The Bachelorette, if it's going to be at a rose ceremony. There are multiple ways to get roses, and a player should always be savvy about how they could possibly do it in any given situation. And so how does a player get these roses, you ask?
How does a player get these roses?
Oh, thank you for asking. Very usually, it's by going on dates. And in our beloved game, there are multiple types of dates.
The first type of date is a group date. This is basically where you're being forced to compete for the Bachelor's attention with a dozen or more players. There are many different types of group dates. They tend to all be traumatic, involve violent physical competition, like you're playing football or boxing, forced uncomfortable nudity, public performance, or enduring Fear Factor-esque challenges that require eating bugs or drinking your own piss or things of that nature. You know, dates.
Yeah, it's a regular group date. And that's why we're all aware that this is a game. That's not how you date. That's not how anyone builds a relationship. It's only through the context of this game that these things even exist. Then we have a one-on-one date, or a date, as most people call it. But in the game, it's called a one-on-one. So on the one-on-one, a player is going to be instantly shoved into a spotlight in front of the other players. They will be jealous. and you'll have to kind of deflect that a little bit. But a one-on-one is crucial to nail, especially in the early part of the season. A one-on-one very usually means that the player is a high priority for the Bachelor. Later in the season, it can be used as an execution tactic, and you have to be very careful if you get selected on a one-on-one late in the season. It could mean that the Bachelor wants to get rid of you, and you're going to have to do something on that date to change his mind, to really turn the tables. You're going to have to execute a high-level play in order to do that.
You're going to have to keep listening if you want to find out what those high-level plays are.
That's correct. Today, we're just going over the fundamentals of the game. We're laying a brief groundwork as to what the game is and kind of the parameters of it. As we continue in this series, Game of Roses, How to Win the Bachelor, we are going to be outlining basic strategies, highly complex strategies, experimental strategies.
Some very fun experimental strategies,
but they would work. They would work. We know this. We've had this conversation. Anyway, you're going to have to stay tuned for that. It will be coming up in another episode.
We have definitely not spent too much time evaluating this game. There's not enough time that could be spent.
The game constantly evolves. As we just discussed in the opening of this very episode, we are now in a new era of the game, or new for a few years at least, the Instagram era. It's going to change again when Instagram and influencers and all this kind of stuff fall out of favor, or it evolves into something even more insane. This game, too, will follow that trend. And we will be here to create new strategies and break it down even further. But there's still one more or a couple more types of dates here.
What is the other type of regular season date that we have?
The other type of regular season date is, of course, the two-on-one. Now, this has fallen out of favor. In this past season, I don't think we saw one on Bachelorette, did we?
They tried to do it. They had a three-on-one that they basically made into a two-on-one with Pete and Luke and
Yeah,
Luke.
But that wasn't quite it. The traditional two-on-one is they built a rivalry between two players through the show, and they send those two players on a single date with the Bachelor. Usually there's one rose, and the Bachelor is going to give it to one or sometimes neither of the players. A two-on-one is a dreaded date that should be avoided at all costs if possible, because best case scenario, you have a 50% chance of being removed from the game. Worst case, 100, because the Bachelor gives no one a rose.
You also have a 76% chance of being dismissed either on that date or the following rose ceremony if you're one of the participants. Statistically, it's very bad.
Once the regular season has concluded, the player is now in the playoffs. And in the playoffs, we see some new types of dates. The first is the hometown. For the hometown, a player is forced to take the Bachelor to a location that was meaningful to them in the town where they grew up. And secondarily, the player is then forced to introduce their family to the Bachelor. Your mom, your dad, your brothers, your sisters, your best friend, your high school football coach, your dog,
your weird brother.
All of these people can be used in your hometown strategy, and that should never be taken for granted. A good strategy here before you go to the hometowns is to set something up with your family or with any of the people that you're going to use in your hometown package. When the producers are out shooting the various things around your town, you can tell your family what to do. You can conscript them to be players, a team, if you will, in this one moment for you to do whatever you need in that
moment. Should all be aligned with you and be on your team, or you should not have them participate in your hometown date.
And that conversation should be had with them before you go on the show, before day one of shooting. Because once you're in the system, once you're in the game, it's unlikely that you'll ever have a chance to talk to anyone outside of the production again until you see them face to face. So come up with a strategy before you go on the game that will help you ultimately in hometowns.
The next type of playoff state is the fantasy suite.
We know the fantasy suite. This is our favorite round, usually, of the entire season.
First, it starts with a romantic one-on-one date in whichever exotic locale the producers have selected that season. At the date's culmination, each player is given the opportunity of spending a night with the Bachelor without cameras recording their behavior. And this is the first time that they are off camera the entire season. There's an implication that this false privacy can foster an environment conducive to sexual activity.
That is correct. Woo-hoo. And it's in this moment, when the sexual activity begins, that a player can win or lose the ring or the crown. Because up to this point, the Bachelor is basically falling in love with all of them. We've seen that in the last four or five seasons of the show. That's become very common. The yes. notion that The Bachelor can say, I love all of these people. And so what then makes him decide this person over that person? Well, it's how they fuck. That's 100% the truth. But everything a player does in the fantasy suite should be calculated and executed with precision to make sure that she makes it to the final two.
So in the final week, you have to meet The Bachelor's family.
And this is really the last date you go on in the entire game.
Here is where you're basically deciding your strategy if you're going for the ring or the crown.
I don't know if that's true. I'll disagree with you for 1 second. I think you decide that strategy before you ever come on the show. What do you really want? As a player, you have to make that decision because there are subtle plays, which we'll get to in subsequent episodes, as I mentioned earlier. But there are subtleties in play style that need to be implemented throughout the entire season if you're going to go for the crown versus the ring. But specifically, I think the fantasy suites is where you really hone in on a crown strategy if you're going for the crown. It's basically bad fucking.
No, we're not giving away the strategy.
Look, we can tantalize. This is a strategy that we will get into in explicit detail later, rest assured. But it's basically this. Once you make it to the fantasy suites, if you want to be the bachelorette, all you have to do is fuck bad. You go in there. You don't say, I'm not going to have sex with you. You have sex. You just make it the worst sex possibly imaginable. Make it very short. Make it potentially painful for the bachelor. Physically, I mean.
Starfishing.
You have to find out what the bachelor likes and do the opposite. That's essentially it. You just have to paint a picture that the bachelor would not want to have a long-term sexual relationship with you. He will then dismiss you the next day, and you will get to be a victim, which in this game is very good, because if you can be perceived as a victim, the game then owes you something that's kind of implied, like Becca Kufrin, the greatest victim to ever play the game. She became the bachelorette immediately.
Enough about our Game of Roses certified strategy of bad fuckery.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to
subsequent
it later.
Episodes.
Right. One of the other fundamentals of the game is the producers. Who are the producers?
The producers may seem like an incredibly invisible part of the game as we watch episode to episode because they're rarely seen. Although in this past season, we did see them multiple times. Their hands coming in to pull the strings of the players. They control essentially every aspect of a player's life. Every scenario they are on in dates, even the house life, the parties, literally everything. Once you're in the game, the producers decide everything that is happening to you. And they start to construct storylines. If they see that you're in a fight with someone, or even not in a fight, if there's just some way for them to brew up a fight between you, they will try to construct these things and
exploit
them.
They're basically scientists in a very fucked up experiment at this point.
They'll take any personal traumas or tragedies you might have had. They'll exploit that to make you cry and try to have a nervous breakdown. Each stage of the game kind of lets the producers have a new opportunity to force any player into a variety of situations designed to propel their story forward, whatever that story may be as the producer is constructing it. And as much as the game is a competition among the players, it's also a competition for the producers to see who among them can choreograph the craziest shit, who can get the players to break the fastest. So it's worth noting, if you're a player coming into the game, that the producers are not to be trusted ever, and you're to be aware of their presence and their hand in everything that's happening at all times.
They are not your friends. They are trying to break you. Another fundamental of the game, and perhaps this is the most important of all of the fundamental principles that comprise the game, is right reasons. The right reasons is sort of the foundation of the show. It's a conceit that maintains the illusion that The Bachelor is anything more than a corporate marketing engine designed to sell things to its fan base. It's woven into the fabric of the game. They say it over and over. They've done raps about it. The players, the producers, Chris Harrison says right reasons all the time. It's a mantra that they say over and over, that everyone must be there for the right reasons. It's basically an accepted admittance that a player is only participating in the game to find love, that the Instagram followers, the trips, the prizes, the sparklers, the celebrity, and all other material gain associated with appearing in the game is circumstantial. And basically, the player must do everything possible to avoid having their motivation questioned by the other players or the Bachelor. If you're accused of being in the game for the wrong reasons, you rarely outlive the accusation.
Perfectly put. I would argue that there's one final fundamental of our beloved game.
What is that?
It's the Dark Lord Harrison himself. Lord Harrison, in our game, serves as a referee, an umpire, but he also is the face of the producers, and he can never be questioned. Whatever he's saying, whatever he's presenting to the players when he interacts with them, is sanctioned by the producers in order to move some story forward or to signify that a new piece of the game is beginning. Lord Harrison, essentially, is to be treated as the game itself. He is kind of the face of the game, and a player should never go against him. And in fact, befriending Lord Harrison, or at least on the surface, giving the impression that you're befriending Lord Harrison, can be very valuable for a player down the road.
We have no sign of him stopping, right? As we discussed on a previous episode, he might live forever.
I think Wells is going to take his spot.
Really?
Yeah. I think they're grooming that.
Interesting. I just don't feel like Wells is like young enough to like...
Young enough? Isn't he like 20 years old or something?
Is he? Maybe I just see him. I just see him on Bachelor Clues and he looks weathered.
I do that on purpose. so there you have it. Those are the basic fundamentals of the game. The unwritten rules that comprise it, that give it structure, that give it shape, that allow our players to go through it with goals in mind. Again, they are, just a quick recap, the two prizes, the ring and the crown. This is being chosen by the Bachelor for marriage, or it's being chosen as the next bachelorette.
Then you have the structure of the game. You have the regular seasons, the first 7 weeks. Then you have the playoffs, where you have hometowns. And then you have the finals.
And of course, roses are a fundamental of the game, the in-game currency. Always trying to get a rose no matter what. And then we have the dates themselves, of which there are a few types. Group date, the one-on-one, the two-on-one. And then in the playoffs, we have the hometown and the fantasy suite. And then in the end, we have the meeting of the parents.
Other fundamentals are we've got the producers, you've got the right reasons, and of course, our beloved Dark savior, Lord Harrison. Praise be.
So that's essentially it. We hope that this has given you some kind of an outline, a higher kind of context for the game as we watch it, because I know most people who watch it know all of these things kind of implicitly, but to give it a name and a definitive structure, I feel like, is necessary to really understand this as a game, which is what I hope this series of podcasts that we're doing now in the off season will do for anybody listening to this. Allow you to watch the game in a different kind of way, in a more studied way, in a way that will allow you to kind of understand what's actually happening in it a little more so that you can peer through the veneer of, oh, it's just a stupid reality TV show, and actually see that, no, it's a multi-billion dollar global business built on forcing people into horribly strange emotional duress.
And of course, finding love.
Exactly. So thank you once again for listening, and we'll be back next week.
What's our episode next week going to be?
Next week, we are going to cover some general strategies. Once the fundamental pieces of the game have been covered, we can start discussing how the game is actually played. Things that players should keep in mind at every phase of the game, procedures that would give them a solid base for how to maneuver through it at higher levels and get what they want out of it.
If you're going on the show, you're definitely going to want to listen to this week's episode.
Yeah, so please forward this to anybody who's going on The Bachelor. Thank you once again. We'll see you next week.
Praise be Lord Harrison.